Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and itty-bitty little living space. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
Toward the end of this podcast, a whole bunch of ants will arrive.
Ah, you've been in my kitchen. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
John, it's never too late to stop being a dick.
We're back. We're back. And we're back to talk about superhero content.
That's a change of pace.
Yeah, like the New Yorker cartoon about a man crawling out of the desert.
I'm sorry, this is a Star Trek podcast.
Yes.
You were away for
apparently 1 week now. Is all it takes for the podcast to be snaked right out from under me. But yeah. No, we're back.
I got bored, more specifically. See, man, if you could keep up with the lingo, you'd be feeling a lot more at home.
Boy, yeah. Clearly, I know nothing about Star Trek, so we'll just, you know.
The shame is, it's like it would be fun to talk to you about it, too. But
I'm here, we have to be on task.
It's like, yeah. And whose fault is that?
It's not mine. It's Kang's, probably.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I know. In the last episode, we promised that we'd talk about Guardians of the Galaxy 3. But the dirty secret is, I still haven't seen it because it's hard to schedule time to go to a movie theater, apparently. But I have
an infant child. Come on,
I know.
Don't be hard on yourself.
I would bring him, but it seems a little too much.
Yeah, I think you should be harder on yourself.
I feel that you're both very small and sitting on my shoulders.
Definitely do not take him to a movie.
There was a time where I could get away with, we took him once to a movie, but, those days have passed and now he would just be way too interested. That's a problem. We're not going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy 3. However, I did manage to catch Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, which is on Disney Plus now, which made it a lot easier. Only took 3 nights to watch a movie, so there we go. So we're going to discuss that. This is the hard-hitting news of February, covered for you in May. So you're welcome.
The thing is, though, there's a time-traveling dad joke in here somewhere that I can't figure out. But between time-traveling dad and the quantum realm...
What we're going to do is, Guy's going to edit this podcast, and then we're going to send it back in time to figure
the, out. I think that's, yeah.
I don't know.
Through our
machine
network.
I think, I'm pretty sure that was a plot in the season of time-traveling dad that got interrupted by the writer's strike. I think that was
a weird one.
Yeah, they got weird. Yeah. They got weird. Not unlike this movie.
Do you know what's it's funny? When that episode came out and all of the placards were for shows that didn't exist, and it now in hindsight it turns out that the placards for today shows you know what I mean?
It messes with your mind a bit. Yeah.
It messes
if you look at those, if you go back and look at them, they make sense.
Yeah. It's The Mandalorian or Star Trek Strange New Worlds. So it's they're on placards, but they didn't exist at the time the episode came out.
They were funny at the time, right?
Sure.
A show about a Mandalorian.
There'll
That'd
be a Star
cool,
Wars TV show someday.
And the ultimate joke was the one about the Book of Boba Fett, and it was super. They were saying how bad it was, and that's
how could a show about Boba Fett be bad? I mean, that seems
it can't be bad.
Nonsense.
It's 1988. Yeah. Boba Fett is
impossible.
Nothing can make.
Also,
Boba
he's
Fett
dead.
Bad.
So you know.
Also, he's dead. So how can they even do that?
No, we didn't believe that back then.
No,
that's true.
No.
I think it was in a comic book, right?
That's true. It's true.
The Sarlacc, and that was what we held on to.
Anyway, that was our beliefs.
It was a different time.
Anyway, yes, we're here to talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, the third Ant-Man movie. Who thought we'd live in a world where there were 3 Ant-Man movies? Not me. But here we are.
Well, 2 Ant-Men, so why not 3
There
movies?
You go. 2 Ant-Men, 3 movies, no waiting. How should we just dive in, I guess?
Should we do a little recap? Do we need to do it? I mean, is it possible to recap this movie?
I can do this movie in 30 seconds.
Go for it. Yeah, me too.
The entire Ant-Man clan gets transported into the quantum realm in which there is a civilization, and basically Kang has formed an empire down there, so they need to fight him. Turns out that he and Janet have history, because when Janet was trapped in the quantum realm, and that makes him very angry. Scott and Scott's daughter, Cassie, is now also a superhero and has a suit and joins with him in the fight, along with a bunch of rebels. And then some ants show up. Also, Bill Murray is there briefly. I think I covered it. They beat Kang and go back to the present. But do they beat Kang? Because there's lots of Kangs potentially.
Ants ex machina.
That's right. There's your 30,000. Oh, also, the villain from the first Ant-Man movie is now MODOK. You're welcome.
Yeah.
I'd kind of like to start there, but let's
Me
not.
Too. Me too.
That's not the worst place to start.
I've been saying that maybe the Kang performance was the highlight, but going back, I think MODOK kind of steals the show.
And I was not so okay. Well, I guess we're starting there. Because I had this spoiled for me before I got to see the movie. Because I think I waited like 2 weeks to go see it. And my expectations were very low, so that kind of colored my perception going into it. And I think I ended up enjoying it a lot. But the thing is, like, I was expecting to be very disappointed in MODOK because I did not want it to be, what's his name?
Darren Cross.
Darren Cross. Yeah. For some reason. For some reason, I thought, oh, I don't like that. Wanted him to be dead or something. You know, like, I didn't enjoy it. But coming out of the movie, I quite enjoyed it. I enjoyed it rather a lot, actually.
Yeah, that's a character that seems tough to do, and yet they kind of made it work.
Yep. Well, they made it silly, frightening, frightening in a kind of twisted way. got little baby legs, and yet at the same, you know, frightening and also silly, which I think is perfect.
They leaned
for MODOK,
right.
Which
they,
is actually what MODOK
they leaned
is.
Into the fact that MODOK is inherently a very hard to like do character, right? Like, he's ridiculous. He looks ridiculous, right? He has a terrifying nature to him, but fundamentally, if you translate from the comics to real life, he just looks kind of dumb, right? But they kind of pulled it off. Right. I've seen a bunch of different versions of this. Like, there is a MODOK version in there was a they did MODOK in the Marvel Avengers game that was not terrible.
Oh, right.
There was the MODOK show, which I did not watch, but I guess
I saw the first episode.
And there's even like MODOK.
It's like, animated though, right?
Yeah, so, it's like sort of stop motion the type thing.
Yeah,
yeah, claymation, yeah, sort of. Thing.
And then there have been MODOK versions in the comics even who have been played for like comedic characters as well. So I think people kind of leaning into that made sense. And I thought that was a good, I knew MODOK was going to be in there, although I had forgotten, but once he showed up, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that I'd seen somewhere that MODOK was in here. I did not know that it was going to be him, although I figured it out like basically just as he should, like perfect timing, right? That moment where you're just a step ahead and you're like, oh, I see what's happening. And that was kind of a good reveal at that point.
Yeah.
There's some character stuff to it too. Not particularly for him, but for Cassie,
a
little bit.
He gets
for him,
a little redemption chance.
It's right.
Oh yeah. So he gets the redemption, but it doesn't like not all of it's kind of coming out of the blue. Like, why am I a killbot now? Kind of because look at me. Like, there's not a lot that makes sense for his actual character from the first movie, but I don't care. He's a good.
I mean, he's been crushed down into a tiny little right, like, is the way he and
he's
dies
clearly
in the
gone
first
bananas.
Movie. Yeah, so
exactly. Yeah,
like that worked for me because it rang like kind of it worked with the way his demise happens on screen in the first Ant-Man movie.
Yeah, it actually works
and like kind of makes sense. Yeah. So you're like, oh, okay, I'm willing to get on board for that.
Which feels especially what I suspect to be the process. It was just kind of accidental that they crushed his whole body down, leaving his head so that it would read on screen what's happening rather than the inverse. Do you know what I mean? Like, it feels like it was a visual trick rather than planning to make MODOK in the quantum.
Oh, yeah. I don't think they were planning on it.
It was just a happy accident. Yeah, of like, exactly. Hey, look, we crushed his head all small, so cool. I liked it. I did think he was sort of an interesting counter or tool for Cassie's character in that she confronts the big scary bee man.
Right. And, yeah.
The guy that showed up in her bedroom when she was eight or nine, whatever she was.
Yeah. I think
she defeats him.
That works. That works well. I was going to say, I find it interesting. Also, MODOK and Kang, both heavy hitters, not people I expect in an Ant-Man movie again, which is kind of fascinating as a counterweight to Scott. I mean, in the past, I think, you know, we've either seen him face off against people who have sort of similar power sets, right? Like we've seen him face off against Yellow Jacket in the first movie. And in the second movie, you get just like a, I know, John, you mentioned kind you like this better than the second movie. Yeah. I love the second movie, honestly. It's one of my favorites because I like that they, I'm sure we discussed this at the time, but I like that Ghost, who is the primary antagonist, but isn't really a villain, like they save her at the end. Like that to me, I like that aspect of it, that it was like not just a let's fight somebody and beat them up and then we win because we beat them up. But it's like, no, this is a person who is like, you know, it has their own struggle going on and they're misguided in the way they're doing it. And we're going to actually, you know, extend an olive branch. And that's how we resolve this. And I thought that was
I think mostly what I like is the humor in this one. And because I think the jokes land better than the jokes in the second movie.
I don't know if I agree with that, but I'm with it.
I really found all of the, you know, and again, it's mostly MODOK, but it's not all MODOK. I mean, there's this sort of group of weird denizens of the quantum realm, and some of them are pretty amusing as well. And the whole thing about drinking the ooze I enjoyed, which was super weird, but handled like pretty well. And I mean, and that reveal I think was fun and funny. The fact that, you know, they seem super threatening and then all of a sudden you can hear them talk and they're like, they just seem like normal people.
Yeah. Except for the light bulb head who wants to torture everybody.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Who gets his head blown up, which
is very sad.
Yeah.
The moral to that story.
So the first time into this movie, I was kind of bewildered in it. Like, there's a lot. There's a lot going on. And this time, I just watched it just before recording. And I had in my head, like, okay, it's a labyrinth kind of thing, or like a Wizard of Oz kind of thing. Mm. Like, we start a little bit at the beginning. Event, like in the, you know, literally a vortex sucks him in, and then we're in a strange new world having strange new stuff happen, and it doesn't really matter that that world doesn't make a lot of sense or isn't coherent, or like we're doing stuff like pouring ooze down the guy's mouth. The utility of that is not to tell the story, but to establish the place as being weird and bananas and insane. And the buildings are alive, which a detail I loved. Like, there's a lot of weirdness to the world that doesn't actually do anything for the plot. Like Dan said, it's like a 30-second plot. And Dan, I think your description of it was being generous by mentioning character names, which are kind of ancillary to anything, you know? The ant family gets stuck in there. They try to stop Kang from getting out. They do. Cool. They go home. That's basically it. But a lot of the weirdness of the world really worked for me this second time through, and I kind of enjoyed a bunch of that.
I agree with you that I liked how bananas everything was, and I like that we don't explain anything, and it's enough to know, like you said, I think Wizard of Oz is a great comparison. It's like, we don't need to explain to you the mechanics of how this world really works. All you need to know is, like, there's people down here, and there's a bad guy, right? I love some of the... Some of the stuff works so much better when you don't explain it. Like, I love the whole bit with Bill Murray eating the drink with like the live squid in it or whatever, and then they blow the squid up and it eats him instead. Thing. And like, you're like, I don't need to know anything about this other than that is hilarious.
It's like, now I'm bigger than you.
See how you
That's
like
some of the stuff I really used to love about Star Wars. I mean, I guess I still do, but like as a child, I don't know what Ord Mantell is. Like any weird thing that they happen to mention in Star Wars, I'm like, that is awesome. You're just making the whole place sound huge.
And in a way, you know, we joked about that earlier, but like a lot of the subsequent explanation of things has ruined some of those things.
Exactly.
And so I think that is one thing that works really well here. I think one thing that I'll disagree with my esteemed colleague from the Pacific Northwest. One thing that I missed about this a little bit was I really enjoyed the supporting cast of the first two movies, where you have like Luis and Kurt, and I think they add a lot of texture, and the fact that both of those movies are, I think, much like on a, this is going to sound, I'm going to have to like force all the puns. Yeah. The smaller scale, if you pardon the expression. I liked that aspect of it, that he was always him dealing with problems that felt a little more down to earth. And this one is just wild and bananas. And like, it's almost like a Guardians movie, right? Like,
well, and I think that's why I went in with such low expectations, because when I first saw the trailer, I was like, oh God, this seems like, you know, not to speak ill of CGI, which I love. You know, like, seems like a CGI fest. I don't think I'm going to like this movie. It's going to be too much going on. And so I think, you know, I mean, having seen that trailer and having my expectations set to poor, yeah, it really did way better, yeah, than I, yeah, expected it to. But I think, I mean, I largely agree. I would rather, in general, and I think this is a problem with most of the MCU movies, and we've talked about this in the past, but there's an over, they keep trying to one-up themselves, and so they keep making these, mm-hmm, weirder and weirder situations that are harder to relate, yeah, to, harder to understand, and they would do better to just, like,
there was stick- a,
you know, go back to some basics.
The premise of sort of early MCU movies was, what if it was our world, but it had superheroes, right? And yeah, and we've,
yeah,
gotten,
yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same thing that happened with the CW.
Yes. Right. Yeah. 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 Because your stories have to get more elaborate and more involved and more complex. And they, some of the ways to do that are to make things more outlandish and wild. And like, there's nothing wrong with that, mm-hmm, inherently, but I do miss the, like, I think that's one thing that a lot of the TV shows have done really well, is deal with more grounded stories, because they're much yeah, smaller in scope often.
Smaller.
And I understand some of this feels...
You mean the Marvel shows, right?
Yeah, like, not exactly. The, not, yeah, yeah,
what, the CW,
yeah,
stuff.
The MCU, yeah, TV, yeah, shows. And I think a, yeah, lot of this... I'm with you, John, that some of my frustration came from, like, this is the first time I really felt like, okay, the overall MCU story, like, it's got... We've got a schedule. Right, like, yeah,
right.
We got to get Kang in here. We got to introduce all that. Yeah, let's. All right, it's got to go in this Ant-Man movie because it's the only one on the schedule in the right place. And yeah, that, you know, I worried about that aspect of it. But
they also need to bring Cassie up. I mean, have, yeah, they announced a Young Avengers thing? Because
no,
like,
but it's
one,
it seems, you know, like
they're leading.
I kind of wonder.
It,
this, yeah, is actually,
they've got all the most of the pieces.
Side note, pitch on this one, which is, I was thinking about this today. I think it would be interesting is the dynamic they set up at the beginning of this movie, where Cassie is very much like, we should be helping people. Like, she always wants to intervene.
Yeah.
And I felt like setting the a potential future up where there's like a bunch of young Avengers who essentially are like, not those old guys. They just want to protect the status quo, man. Like, we gotta get in there. It's like the youthful firebrands. I thought that might be an interesting dynamic to play with at some point, is having some of the young Avengers be like, why are you guys just sitting on your asses? Like,
yeah, well, it puts them in a, you know, I was going to say friendly, but, you know, like a slight conflict with the actual Avengers at that point, right?
Yeah, exactly. I thought that could be an interesting,
like, parents
dynamic.
Have to be like, would you, like, you get super battle between heroes, which is always, there's always an excuse to be had to make that happen, you know? So, yeah, maybe that's kind of fun.
But there's an element of, like in this movie, is like, well, yeah, but you also want to protect them, right? You want to protect the kids from, like... By the way, like, yeah, it's great that you want to help these people, but also realize these are super powerful villains that could kill you.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, for sure. I do think that they didn't revisit the little guy thing enough for me. Mm,
the memoir?
Well, no, not the memoir. I mean, specifically the, she's like, she wants to help people, and there's no really a turning point for Scott. Like, his whole book is like, look out for the little guy, blah, 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 blah. And then he goes home, and they're having that discussion over the dining room table about how she's been protesting the eviction of unhoused people and this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is great. And she's saying, look out for the little guy, and he's saying, no, don't. So his public words, his book, is out of sync, effectively, with the way that he's actually living his life. In a good way. It's like,
it feels
like
glib,
a cynical,
right?
Jerk, like, kind of thing. But yeah, it's kind of glib, yeah. But I didn't really get the sense that he flipped the switch there at the end, where he does kind of stand up for the denizens of the quantum realm. Because A, they're so abstract and weird, and B, I don't think he ever does. He just wants to beat up Kang for Cassie. Like, it gets a little muddied. I don't see his character land the bit that I thought we were going to get, at, you know.
Yeah, his motivation ends up being entirely about Cassie, not so much, like, I mean, there's a little bit, right? Like, yeah. I agree with you, it's muddy, because, like, he does have the option at one point to, like, go home, but, like, you know, and he, like, he essentially, I thought there was a nice bit there that's kind of a throwback. There's a shot in particular where he gets up after Kang is beating the crap out of him. And yeah. I really expected him to say, I could do this all day. Like, because he's such a Cap fanboy. But he it kind of channels Cap where he's like, all right, I have to take this beating because I'm the only person standing in the way here.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, it doesn't meld with exactly what you're saying. It doesn't meld with his idea of like, let's look out for the disadvantage amongst us.
Because I understand that these are literally little tiny itty bitty people, right? But it's not connecting to our world in any such way that we feel like it, that's the payoff. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm, like it's not like he's at the end, like helping homeless encampment or right. anything. Like there's no key that we can latch onto.
In fact, he goes back to his life that's almost exactly the same as the life. Like, that shot is the same, right?
Yeah, like, it doesn't seem like it's any different.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, I got a conspiracy corner about that coming up. But yeah, so that
oh, well.
Didn't quite land for me. My favorite sequence was when he gets into the probability storm.
Mm.
I liked that a lot. I mean, I guess full disclosure, our friend Todd worked on that. He was a soup on that, I think. And I loved it. I thought it was very cool. And it also, like, it had Scott working as an ant, like all of the Scots coming together to work as an ant.
I love the Baskin Robbins Scott.
Yeah. I don't even think that registered to me until I saw it the second time.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, it's like ants.
It's a very clever thing. And I love that it's all chaos until all of them start, like, well, we got to save Cassie. So who doesn't matter? They are united in their ant hive mind of like, with a single purpose. And that's great because all of the possibilities.
They're going to lose some of them. They're going to lose some of them, but they're all
doing
the thing.
All of the possibilities are working towards the same goal. So that's cool. And it's great. And it works for ants and it works visually. And it, you know, that is really cool. And once Hope comes down and saves her, what does he say? He literally mentions her name and he gets saved and he says, are you real Hope? And she says, yes, I'm real, which is a very like on the nose sort of declaration of what's happening. And then they screw up the whatever big fuzzy duzzy warp drive MacGuffin. That they were messing on MacGuffin that they were getting. I kind of like that bit, but it didn't hit the key theme of like, look out for the little people.
Right. It felt to me like a weird like idea that was put in, but like then doesn't matter either before or afterwards. Like to me that scene is very disconnected because it's like, it felt very much like this looks cool and it does look cool. So let's like put it in there because we need an obstacle for him to overcome before he gets the MacGuffin.
I don't think he was at a loss for hope or at any sort of crossroads emotionally about
I agree.
Save Cassie.
It's a cool little vignette, but it's kind of one of the places where I feel like you see the strings a bit because it's just like, okay, I see what we're doing mechanically here, but the scene doesn't really flow exactly. So it's not bad, but it's like a little.
It actually worked for me emotionally, but not as part of the story.
No, just exactly. As a self-contained little thing, it actually is pretty good, but it's just a bit janky.
Well, the story's a little janky.
The story is all a little bit janky. It works pretty well given all the stuff it is trying to do and all the various things it feels like it has to do. I felt like you did pretty well. Like it felt like somebody laid out a task for these people and like they had to navigate it. And it's like, in the strictures of what you had to do, that was pretty good. I would throw in a Taskmaster analogy, but John doesn't watch Taskmaster.
I do.
I've seen an episode.
I know, but it felt like a task, basically. It felt like a task in Taskmaster. Yeah. It's like, all right, bicycle backwards with a blindfold on. You're like, it's not going to go great, but I'm going to give it my best shot.
Yeah. Right.
Kang. I guess we got to talk about Kang.
Kang.
Do we? Who else is there to talk about?
We don't have to completely rehash it. We've already talked about, you know, the problematic nature of.
I will add as an asterisk Jonathan that Majors. it did sap some of my joy for like every time Evangeline Lilly's on the screen too. And it's just like,
Oh, also, yeah. I mean, and some of my joy for the movie in general, you know, between the two of them was...
Yeah, I felt the same thing. Because I just find myself thinking about it every time they're on screen. It's like, I don't want to think about it while I'm watching a movie. Right. And it's you know, and that's that is what it is. But that's how I feel. I don't want to think about it. And yet, here I am thinking about it. Yeah, but we'll talk about Kang from a character standpoint. What is with his accent? That I have to ask. It vacillates between kind of a pseudo British accent and no accent at times, and I couldn't, like, I found myself listening very closely.
I didn't really notice
that. Go back and rewatch it. It's there.
I thought that was more timed with when he's being big and pronounced.
Yes.
Like, giving pronouncements. He's got the British Imperial dictate voice.
Very formal and...
Yeah, when he's trying to just be charming or talk to Michelle Pfeiffer, I think he's got like a more just his natural voice, I guess. Like a,
it's not as
American,
big.
It's a smaller
voice that has a little more colloquial. It's like a little less stiff in some ways. Like when he gets kind of a Shakespearean thing going on when he's doing the big I am Kang and let's do that. And then when he's trying to talk to somebody, he's a little more like, why don't you help me out? And like,
so I think the accents doesn't drift so much as is like a choice. I think it's probably a choice too.
Yeah. It's just, it was something that jumped out at me because it popped out at a couple points and I was like, I should go back and watch this and see if he's actually maintaining that throughout or whether this is just, is it a put on, right? Like, how much of it is Kang being like, I'm putting out the face of Kang who is invincible and, you know, the conqueror.
I think it's carrying on that long cinematic tradition of, like, if you speak with an upper crust British accent, you're the bad guy.
Yes. Yep.
Which I feel is so, it's pretty well earned, to be honest. And also, like, Star Wars is just rife with that. Like, if you're a white dude and you speak in a British accent, you're probably a very bad guy. Or, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right. There's he's pretty good.
He's my favorite guy, but you know, he's the exception to the rule.
I mean, I think he does well with that. I mean, whether you like the accent thing or not, I think he does well with flipping that switch, which gives Kang a sort of sort of psychotic air to him that and you know, we could also talk about what that means about Jonathan Majors, but I don't want to go into armchair psychologists, but you know, the fact that you can be two different people depending on what you're trying to accomplish is probably fairly on the
nose. I mean, and there's a charm and it's a certain degree. It's showing the outward world what you want them to see, like whatever will mean. Maybe less psychopath than sociopath, I guess. Like, let me just present the face that will convince you to do the thing that I want you to do.
Right.
Because it definitely with Janet, he has that very, like, you know, he kind of lets his guard down, it feels like, right? He's very open with her, it seems. Like, he plays her, but he...
Well, at the beginning, he's got no power. Like, he's literally does seem stuck there. He's stuck there, she's stuck there, and there's... They seem to get along and work together towards a common goal.
And even when she finds out who he is, he's like, that's fine. Just don't worry about it. Like, you can come with me still. Like, I'm not going to double cross you. I'm not like a cackling villain.
I completely believe him. I'm like, I'm really quite sure he would take her home and then destroy all of the other gangs. Except hers. I think he's good to his word because what is he doesn't care. He's not mad at her. So, anyway.
Acting as far as acting notes, I think it's a fairly impressive performance. I think it's pretty good. He comes off very sinister and threatening throughout and sort of cool and I guess calculating if you know what's going on. But you know, he manipulates Janet, pretty effectively. And then is suddenly revealed, and his demeanor changes pretty quickly when he does. So I think all the pieces work quite well. And he's, you know, sort of bizarre and over the top at the end there when there are multiple versions of him. And I still, you know, wish they would change the actor.
To get into a little more conspiracy corner section, do we think that the Conqueror is dead, really? Or is there...
Yeah, I got a couple of things about that. I mean, he gets sucked into, like, that time tube thing, right? So, I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah, you can...
Nobody.
Right. I mean, I would have thought Darren was dead, yeah. So who knows?
Yeah. The other thing is like, inside Conspiracy Corner's Conspiracy Corner...
Ooh. Quantum conspiracy.
Did the movie end the way we think it did, or did Scott not make right. it? Not make it.
Well,
you so think there's it's two a different things. Reality.
I think first of all, it's hardly subtle. We've got Rudd walking down the street, being like, "Did that actually happen? Who knows? Everything's
which is
great."
Which is great.
I loved it.
I love that scene. Like, I mean, that just like, you know, because you know, he warns him. He's like, you know, if you kill me, it's going to be worse. And you know, same thing with Loki. And it, so you know that it is definitely a possibility. And then he gets home and he's thinking about it after the fact. You're like, did I just screw up there?
That's yeah. probably fine.
Which would be pretty funny if he did. You know, he was well meaning and trying to do the right thing, and yet he may have actually screwed things up.
It and is the also post credit scene seemed to yeah, indicate that, like, all the other Kangs are now going to come for our reality. Well, whatever. Scott Lang's reality. So I guess my conspiracy question to you is, did his defeat of Kang, did Kang actually get defeated and so all of the other Kangs are going to come? B, did Kang not get defeated and so he's going to come back with a vengeance and that's what's going on? Or C, And here's my real conspiracy corner, which is why I saved it for C, for the triple alliteration. Did Scott ever make it out of that probability storm? And the rest is all a dream. Because it seems to kind of go all his way in a weird way that doesn't even follow. But who knows? It's the end of a superhero movie. They always go
I think he made it out.
Yeah.
I don't think there were any...
There was certainly, you know, no clues that he did.
Yeah, it wasn't signposted in the way of the not. Like the top spinning in Inception, right? Like, if you wanted to make it ambiguous, yeah. I feel like you would hang a little bit more of a lantern on it.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, I don't feel like any particular lantern was help put on.
Yeah,
it
that's
all.
What I'm saying. It's like, no, if you were going to do it, you would want to.
I mean, but like, not even,
it,
not, but, you know, like beyond an obvious one, I don't think any are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, so Kang, dead or alive?
I would guess alive, but
yeah,
I have more.
Yeah, I guess so. If that is the canonical Conqueror, I would,
because he's the threat, really, arguably. I mean, because he wasn't he the one? Like, so here's the question. Also, is like, this ties in with the first season of Loki. It doesn't want you to feel like you had to see that. So in some ways, part of this is kind of a rehash of He Who Remains. Right. His whole thing about like, hey, I'm keeping a lid on all of it. And then they kill him and it's like, oh, there's Kangs everywhere. And then similarly, the Conqueror is like, hey, you got me or you got a whole bunch more Kangs, right? Like, cause now there are all the Kangs are back. But it's still kind of the same end result of like, kill this one version and it's worse off because there's too many of the rest of them.
Right. Are they, it's like Hydra. Are they meant to be the same person? Is like, does the Conqueror retire to like hang up his Conquering and become He Who Remains?
I don't think so, because from what I've read, it suggests much more like they are multiversal variants. Like, they're all from different universes, but they don't have all necessarily the same timeline progression. Like, the comics version is there's one, but he's living his life out of order, which this one does, I think, say at one point that he doesn't live his life in a linear fashion. So maybe they're still alluding to that. But, like, at the end, when you have
it could be
like,
both, right? Because
right, yeah. Within the multiverse, they could be living. Each one could be living their life in a weird or different order.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, you know, I mean, like in the comic books, you run into versions of Kang that are good,
right? Which I was gonna.
And there's a lot of confusion as to whether or not is this Kang before he becomes bad, or is this Kang after he's been bad, and sometimes Kang doesn't.
Or did he become bad because he was
Yeah.
Trying to stop them all from being bad, get thrown into the multiverse or into the quantum realm, get very angry, and then go out and conquer everybody like a real jackass. The reason I was asking if he is the same as the Loki one is because they seem to have very common, like, shared goals, right? And even shared explanations for why you don't want to finish them off. But maybe they all do. Maybe they all think they're trying to keep.
Well, the one from Loki really did, like, have all the timelines under control, right? And, like, his point was he was sort of
the big boss.
And this one seems more like, I'm going to go kill all the other ones. Like, that's my deal.
It seems like he's trying to achieve the thing that the other one has.
Except with a more like, domination sort of aspect to it, right? Like, he wants
Well, he does, I mean, like, running the Time Bureau.
But it was, like, keeping things under control, but it wasn't like, I'm the conqueror of the universe.
Nobody left to conquer. He's like Odin in the Thor movies, where it's like, oh, you got all of this by letting Hera run wild and murder a bunch of people, but now you're all chill. The end goal of He Who Remains seems to be where Kang the Conqueror that we just met wants to go. He wants to get rid of them all and be in charge.
Yeah, I just think it's a different.
You can't just chill with
methodology.
You just think it's a different one. Yeah.
Yeah. But I agree.
I believe that. And I kind of don't care. Like, and I think it's difficult for Marvel to sort of express that because they kind of need all of these bad guys to share a common goal anyway, or else we're never going to understand anything. It'll be gibberish. Like, the stories can't hold together. So they need to have them all basically want the same kind of
thing. I'm not even convinced He Who Remains is a bad guy so much as a, like, There's like a lawful evil or lawful neutral or something. Right? Like, it's just like, I'm just maintaining the status quo. Like, I don't see this as good or bad. I'm just doing it because it needs to be done.
Well, at the very least, he pulled an Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged, right? Because, like, he had the whole multiverse on his shoulders, and then he just let her kill him, thereby doing the Atlas thing and dropping the weight of the world, like letting it all unravel. So there's at least a selfish action in there.
Sure. And I think the point of, like, you sometimes run into good Kang variants. I think that'll happen at some point in this. I think in order to defeat the Kangs, they'll need the help of a good Kang at some point. Yeah. That seems likely to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the only way to defeat a bad Kang is a
good Kang.
It's a good Kang.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm also curious as to where this story goes from here because, I mean, they didn't specifically.
I bet Marvel does too.
I was going to say, it's not specifically said, but it seemed implied to me that post-credit scene with Loki and Mobius was basically like a clip from Loki season 2. Like, that's kind of how I read it.
Seemed like it could be.
Yeah, I don't think it was made for this. I think it was maybe a scene taken from that. And that maybe
it's a little amuse-bouche.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
because it doesn't necessarily pick up where Mobius and Loki left off, but
no, not at all.
No, right? And it's so short; it doesn't even. It's contextless, you know. I think that would have
it's more like, want to know more,
right? Well, and that's my point. Is like looking at sort of the timeline or like the MCU projects that are coming up. I don't think the Marvels will directly deal with this. I don't think.
No,
Guardians
post credit scene probably, but nothing other.
They have they have the genie world where I believe they're all connected, and I think that's all of our multiverse, the quantum realm, all of that jazz. I think is going to end up turning out to be all connected through some.
Right. Yeah. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying more that, like, looking at the actual schedule of movies that are coming up, the things that seem like they don't necessarily.
Oh yeah, sorry.
Where we're doing this.
No, I don't. No, I correct. I don't think that at all. I do think that they're going to, future magic, technology, jazz it all up so that it does fit. And I would not be surprised if multiverse gets mentioned in the Marvels.
It might get mentioned, but it doesn't feel like Kang is really like a big part. Like in the same
way, I don't
think
he's going to be Kang. No Kang for sure. Some kind of tie into the concept of things.
Yeah, because then after that, you have on the schedule the next Captain America, Thunderbolts, Blade. None of which all feel like they are directly tying in with this. Before we get to the, Avengers movie that they're doing, which is like the real Kang. Was that sixth Kang Dynasty? So maybe Fantastic Four is still scheduled to come out before that, which seems like it should have some tie-ins, depending on how much they're hewing to the comics. But yeah,
they got to introduce Fantastic Four to have them beat up Kang,
right? But okay. Also because they like they want. I mean, this is not a spoiler, but like, because if you know anything about the comics, like Kang is originally like a descendant of Reed Richards, right?
Right.
Yeah. So like, it feels like they want to bring them in to play a part in that. But
yeah,
I don't know. And then before that,
wait, if all we've got is like street level ish beat 'em ups coming up between now and the Avengers beating up Kang.
Right. What, that's my question. How are you building this? Yeah. Right. Like, how are you building the narrative?
I guess Loki season two.
That's what I was saying. It was like, where does the story go? Yeah. Like, Loki season two seems like the only other thing, at least in like currently scheduled, that might deal with this. I'm looking to see if there's anything else. Maybe the Agatha show, but I don't even feel like that's necessarily where that's
going.
Yeah,
I wouldn't imagine, but
there's not as much else.
That's
going to
be too court. No, that's good. I think that show, they expect to do well and make money, but not with the crew that is trying to track down Kang's whereabouts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Like, it's the quirky people that really love the Agatha All Along song and, like, a lot of aspects of one.
Isn't there going to be a musical episode of that movie?
At
that
least show? One.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's got, like, a broader, weirder audience, like, because WandaVision, I think, is really pretty approachable, despite it being very intricate. Mm-hmm. I think you can watch it and basically get the gist of stuff. And I suspect Agatha will be along those lines too. Like, I really don't think you're going to need a deep knowledge of the multiverse and time traveling conquerors.
No,
or
not
anything.
That stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So that'll be interesting. I would certainly expect that you'll get references, and then of course you'll get stuff, you know, after the credits.
Right. But, so we just keep throwing
in terms of.
We just keep throwing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Maybe they just change gears and not. Yeah.
Well, you know what?
Though, undo Kang.
Yeah. Well, that would actually kind of make sense.
He's been Kang sold. He's
right,
been Kang sold.
Point,
Kang.
You're welcome. Goodbye, well, everybody.
Good night.
That's what we get when the writers are on strike. Dan just can't be bothered to do any good jokes.
That's true.
He's just phoning it
in. Well,
and
then there's that, too. Yeah. I mean, like, we may not get an answer on Kang for
exactly,
another decade.
Yeah. Between the legal troubles with the actor portraying him and, like, the writers being on strike, man, maybe take a breather.
There's a lot up and there's a lot of balls up in there.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're still going to need some quarterly results at some point. So, yeah, that's. Whatever. Yeah. It's all a mess.
One of the things that sort of bugged me about the movie, I guess, although I sort of turned my brain off to see this movie.
Quick, John, turn your brain back on.
My expectations were low. But, you know, thinking about it after the fact, like, one of the things that bugged me is the ending, and this bothers me a lot in TV and other movies, is when it's very obvious that they're sort of pretending that someone might die.
Yeah,
you know, like a hero might die, and you know that it's really unlikely the hero is going to die. And so you get that, you sort of think, well, maybe Scott's going to, you know, like, I think you're supposed to think maybe Scott's going to die. Of course, Scott doesn't die. And then you're supposed to think, oh, Scott's going to get stuck in the quantum realm. And then you're supposed to think, oh, no, Scott and Hope are going to get stuck in the quantum realm. Like, and then finally it's like, oh, no one's getting
stuck. Yeah, that last bit was a little weird. I mean, so one thing.
It just goes on a little bit.
Yeah, my
too
wife
much.
Was
just like, you know, classic.
My wife
classic
was worried
Marvel
that they were going to kill Janet, which I'm glad they didn't do, or Hank for that matter. I'm glad that they let them both survive. But the scene where they're like, it's our only chance to go home. Well, some of you go home, and the rest of you go, like, once they get home, they just open a door for you again. Like, that removed all,
right,
like,
right. I mean, how,
like, suspense from it, basically. Mm-hmm. I did find that a little weird.
That's kind of where I was going with the, is this an actual reality thing? Like, did he make it out of the quantum realm? Like that?
I think you're giving it too much credit as a intentionality that it doesn't have.
I think, but right.
Because it's
so
weird.
There's no real indication at all that it. I mean, other than the fact that it does, that it seems sort of cheap. There's no indication that it's not real.
I guess. Yeah. I'm with you guys. I suppose I'm reaching because I'm like, that was weird enough that maybe that was something.
That's
like,
great.
And if it was something, it was so poorly done because now I'm guessing.
And with the ants showing up at the end.
Yeah.
Although the ants are teased earlier.
Yeah.
So the ants, you know, as ridiculous as them showing up kind of is, because there's apparently this whole other ant story going on along, you know, on the side that we never saw.
Yeah.
But you get Hank, like, you know, touching his earpiece and stuff like that. I mean, you know that there's something else coming.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. So that, yeah, I mean, at the end, if you didn't have that stuff, and at the end the ants showed up, and then you'd be like, wait, where did that seems really bad.
They even flash back just in case you weren't paying attention
for that. So it's like, okay, yeah, it just seems like it's I don't know what do you I'm lazy
yeah
I guess.
yeah okay so
just easy I guess it's easy
yeah
and you know it's like we got to wrap this up and so here's how we're doing it
yeah
okay good enough
yeah it felt
I guess,
it,
I'm, I guess yeah. I'm like a little bit more disappointed although no matter what if it was something clever it was not done well which makes it not clever and
if it's
not something clever then guess what it's still not done well so
mm-hmm. But like,
So that's part of my reaction to the movie is just I did not expect much,
and you got it.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I will say it was one of the ones I've liked better in recent. Like looking back at the list of recent movies,
more than WandaVision. Madness.
Yeah, I think I liked it better than Multiverse of Madness.
For sure. I definitely liked it better than Madness.
I might have liked it better than Thor. That's hard to say. We spent a lot of time talking about Black Panther and about the good parts and bad parts of Black Panther.
Yeah, I definitely liked it better than Black Panther.
Oh, really? Okay. Interesting. So I feel that we've soured on that further in the time, intervening time.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think I was sour, maybe more sour.
I think as we discussed at the time, that reaches further, and thus when it falls short, I think it hurts more.
We're holding that one to a higher
which
level.
Is this one, if you go in with low expectations, it certainly can pass that bar. And as I said before, I'm a fan of the Ant-Man movies.
I like Rudd. He's a lot of fun.
Paul Rudd's great.
He's great.
It's kind of silly to say that. He's basically, you know, the world's sweetheart at this point. And forevermore, because that guy...
We know. He's never going anywhere. He's Mr. Sinister or something. I don't know.
You've seen that. I mean, you've seen the thing where he plays chess with Stephen Hawking, right? The quantum chess thing.
I don't think I have seen that.
Okay. You should find that. They did some... I guess this was tied into some app. I don't even know who released this... But there was this quantum chess app that came out. And so to sort of promote it, I think it was, I can't remember. But anyway, it's on YouTube. Yeah. Go find it. It's him playing chess online with Stephen Hawking. And it has a couple of terrific cameos in it as well.
Yeah, cool.
And he's, you know, he's playing as Paul Rudd, the actor who starred in Ant-Man.
Wow.
If you like Ant-Man, you should definitely watch that.
I do want to call out Catherine Newton, who plays Cassie, who I thought was great. I know they recast and people got really fussy about that, but I think I think people just get upset feeling like, oh, you don't maintain perfect continuity. But I think, you know, different
that
roles require different things. And they decided that they needed somebody else.
It's like they took their time trying to figure out who they were going to cast on an ongoing role, and they punted in Endgame.
Particularly because Guy, she comes from our delightful Supernatural. She was a regular.
How many times has she died?
She's she's Castiel's Vessel's daughter. She's one of the.
And she's
great. She shows up a bunch, and she was supposed to be in the spinoff. I think that never made it off the ground about a bunch of the young women.
It spun off. It got off the ground just enough to crash. Yeah. I think there was one season of it.
No, it didn't even have that. It had a backdoor pilot.
It was another.
There
one.
Are multiple.
Oh, the other.
No,
the, oh, so not the Winchesters.
Not the Winchesters.
One.
There was the one they were supposed to do called.
That one with
was.
A bunch of the women. That
yeah,
were
with the
be
sheriff
in it,
and everybody, and it didn't make it.
Yeah,
she's also. Yeah. I also knew her from *Halt and Catch Fire*. She is one of the Gordon's daughters in the later seasons, and she's really good in that as well. So she's been in a bunch of stuff. that is impressive. And I think she holds her own here and does a nice job. So.
Yeah, I think she does great. Yeah, I would like to see her playing against, the Hawkeye.
Yeah, Kate Bishop.
Kate Bishop, mm-hmm. And Dan and I were just on a mind meld game where we try to think of what each other was thinking, and I'm hopeless at it. Dan, who is the other person from the Hawkeye show is Clint Barton's nemesis, sister of the Black Widow? Yelena,
yeah. Yeah. Florence Pugh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of talent been set up for Young Avengers. Yeah, it feels like a shame if they don't go there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's a fun little trio, right?
I think they will.
Yeah.
Isn't it announced?
Yep.
Are you sure?
Okay.
I think it's just so obviously the stuff is in place.
They've never actually
announced anything, so. Yeah,
that's probably
they've never actually announced anything.
No. Well, yeah.
That sounds right.
I mean, there are shows out there that we know they're doing that I don't think have been officially announced, like Wonder Man. Like, I don't think they've said very much about that at all.
Well, they're public about casting on that, aren't they? Which is a weird.
Maybe the casting. I don't know if it's public or it's just that we know because these things get leaked. But they haven't put it up as a big thing at one of their presentations about like upcoming TV shows or anything.
Yeah, I think maybe they should stop doing that. We've discussed that before, but like the detailed like plans and all that.
It's tough, especially with things like pandemics and writer strikes. All those things.
I mean, just stop doing
it.
You're tempting the fates at that point.
Yep. Anything else that we should?
I guess overall impressions. Let's go with, I think we've kind of given them all, but. Dan, I think you saw it over 3 days, which kind of gives you a little bit of time to sit back and decide, am I going to go back to this? And you did. So what what kept bringing you back beyond your obligations to us?
I generally enjoy most of the MCU movies, even the ones that I don't like as much. Like, I get some enjoyment out of it. I think this one I struggle with a little bit more because... I don't know. I hate to say it, but I am feeling a little bit of the fatigue. It's not as compelling as it once was. Like, I used to get real jazzed about it. And part of it was like the experience, right? You go to the movie theater and like, oh, it's a brand new movie and it's great. And like, it softened a bit over time. And now I'm like, it's been out for 3 months and I watched it on streaming and I watched it over several nights in my living room. And I think sometimes also I watch on tenterhooks a little bit to see if my wife is going to be enjoying herself because she had a real bad time in a lot of the previous ones.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
So it colored some of my view of it. And she actually liked it, I think. Yeah. She came out pretty positive on it. So
I stopped. I used to go with friends to these movies. And I stopped doing that because I was like, I was enjoying them and they weren't.
That makes your enjoyment go down, for sure.
I'm not dragging them. I'm not dragging them to these movies anymore. And B, I don't want to hear their crap after them.
I just go by myself now, too. Like, in the middle of the day, going to see a thing. Yep. Like, if you can swing it, that's great. Yeah.
So my feeling on this one is, if I were using our rating system, let's say that we've derived. it's tough. It's a mild biff. And I say that mainly because I think the things that work for me are the bizarreness. We haven't mentioned my personal favorite character in the entire movie, who is, I think, is he Vez?
We couldn't tell you any of their names, honestly. Yeah.
The blob who they drink, who is voiced by our pal David Dest Malkian, is that how you pronounce it? Who is the guy who played Kurt in the last movies?
Yeah.
It's a great comedic performance. I love his voice. I love the way he does it. Yeah. I love all the things. If you have not listened to the soundtrack for this movie, at the end is a little song that he sings in that character's voice about having holes, and it's hilarious and weird.
I have not heard that.
I kind of enjoyed that. Also, William Jackson Harper, who we didn't mention as Quaz.
No, we didn't. Yeah, I thought that originally. I thought that
he's fine,
say,
but like they don't ask him to do very much.
No, they don't. Yeah, which is kind of a shame. I mean, you know, he should be
our
fantastic.
Yeah, but that's our multi-Piper Award-winning Katie O'Brien. who has been having a hell of a couple years because she's been in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She's been in this. She's been in Mandalorian. Yeah, she did fine. There's a lot of good stuff
she's,
in here.
She's Gentora. The spy in Mandalorian.
Yeah, the spy in the Mandalorian.
Yeah, Gentora is one of the spy in the Mandalorian. Yeah.
She's been in a ton of other stuff, so she's having a good time.
Yeah. And she had a bigger role than I remember the first time I saw it. It was like, she had, you know, more than one scene and quite a few lines. And
Yeah.
Has a motivation. Like, she's basically all we know from the Freedom Fighters. And cool. Yeah, she's a good face for it and works well.
So overall, I liked a lot of it, and I feel like the stuff that I'm more lukewarm on is A, there's some stuff that's just, you know, kind of squishy and doesn't work as well, and B, I think more just about circumstances for me and when I saw this and when I was able to see it and all that. Yeah. So there you go. That's my... Oh, John? Yeah. Oh, man. Sorry. Jimmy Woo appears in one scene, and we need more Jimmy Woo because
I
love Jimmy Woo. Like, he's fantastic.
Yes.
Did you see the magic trick he did?
Yes. That's why. That's a great. Yeah. It's a great 1 second bit. They don't even give him a line, which I feel terrible about. But I hopefully he appears in more stuff.
Yeah.
But I do like him. You know, I like him being in there.
I'm glad he was there.
His second magic trick is getting paid without having to learn any lines. So good for him. John.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Katie O'Brien was in. Oh, she was in.
She wasn't Black. That was the first place I saw her because I remembered. She has a very distinct look to her. She's like a military officer in that one.
Yeah.
And so then I kept, every time she popped up, I'm like, oh yeah, her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to give it exactly the same rating. I think I come at it from a slightly different view, though. I mean, I didn't have great expectations for this at all. And so it exceeded them by a lot more than I was really expecting. And I just had a really fun time watching it. Like, and I turned my brain off and I didn't want to worry about things like plot. So that helped an awful lot, obviously, because it's not super strong on some of the fundamentals there. I don't think, I think the deus ex machina thing with the ants kind of bothers me a little bit, and all this, you know, the typical, oh gosh, you know, something bad's going to happen to our heroes at the end, but of course nothing bad happens to our heroes at the end. I mean, Scott gets punched a lot, but he's fine. So those things were serious detractors. The crew in the Quantum Realm, while, you know, like I said, I don't remember any of their names. I do remember them and their characters pretty well. I think they did a decent job of making them interesting, because it seems like a lot of times you're thrown into this place and there's going to be a bunch of denizens there or whatever, or like, you know, and you don't connect with them at all. And I think these guys at least were pretty funny. So that was a positive. And overall, I think the movie was quite funny. And particularly MODOK, I've been a long time fan of the character, and going in, I was expecting to not be super jazzed about him, but I came out very jazzed about him and kind of like, you know, I hope he's not really dead, because I think I think he was great and I would love to see him in other stuff. So that version of him, I think, was super good, and kind of reminded me a little bit of the one that's in Secret Avengers in the in the comic book. And so I would love to see him again. I don't want to go too far into Jonathan Majors, of course, because I think he did a great job acting in this movie, but that's almost neither here nor there.
Exactly.
So I'm giving it a fairly good review. I think, like I said, it is one of I've seen another movie that I think is better than this one since then, but it was a pleasant watch after Multiverse of Madness and Wakanda Forever, neither of which I was really thrilled with particularly. So
It's a John Jr. or a mild Biff, depending on which possibility I have at the time. there's a lot of things that I think you could skip this movie and your life will be fine, but even your enjoyment of the MCU is probably just fine. I don't think it's a requirement that anybody watch this to get anything really special. There's a lot of problems with this movie. Like I said, Scott doesn't really click. I don't really understand what the message is. I think maybe Cassie saying, like, let's look out for the little guy, and her actions are meant more to tell us what her character is about, and then we don't really show it. I mean, we do in her heroism in the quantum realm, I guess, but it's not, doesn't pay off yet. I think that's a setup for her character coming up, you know, as they explore her a little bit more. Mordek was fun. When I listened to John say what he loved about the movie, I'm like, yeah, I liked all of those, and that was a lot of fun. She's kind of putting it in Biff territory. As an actual work, I think it's sloppy and it falls apart. Mm-hmm. Like the premise of, like, hey, let's go on a crazy wild adventure, like Alice in Wonderland. Nope. The other one, Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Same thing. They're all the same, that genre of thing. But I'm not entirely sure Scott was the right weighted character to do it with, which is weird because he's kind of the only character that could do it at mm-hmm. the drop of a hat. But like Dan was saying, he's kind of a traditional, like, you know, he's stuck with an ankle bracelet at home. That's a different scalar problem than defeating a multidimensional conqueror. I liked it. It was fun, but I don't think it's a great movie, if that makes any kind of sense at all.
Yeah. What's funny is I think I have exactly this. I would make exactly the same comment. Yeah. Like, I'm giving it a Biff just because I liked it, not because I think it's great.
I kind of feel that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we're all basically in the same ballpark of.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, if you're bored, hey, it's on Disney Plus. Go watch it. But you can't stretch it out over a week and you won't lose anything by doing so.
Yeah. All right. Should we wrap up with anything else, or are we good? There's a bunch of news floating around, but like kind of we're in a weird holding pattern. It. So we'll save it for another moment.
But people do not read our transcripts for the timeliness. I'm pretty convinced of that.
We're only a couple weeks out from Secret Invasion, starts June 21st, which we will be covering probably on a week-by-week basis. Yeah. So tune back in for that, but we'll be back before then. And of course, I would like to thank everybody out there for listening. We appreciate it. We know we're on kind of a weird release schedule and have been for several months because of a surprising drought, because superheroes no longer what they were 2 or 3 years ago. But we appreciate you sticking with us. We appreciate all your support at The Incomparable as a member, as a transcript reader. It really means a lot to us. And of course, if you want to write in and have us answer questions on the air, you can write us at biff@theincomparable.com or reach us on Mastodon. We're on Zeppelin.flights as Biff. And of course, I would like to thank my co-hosts, as always. John Maltz, always a pleasure.
I don't have a zippy ending. Okay. There you go.
Nailed it. Guy, English. Thank you for being
John. John, did you notice that Dan was sort of dancing around, being like, I know we're just kind of treading water. We've been on a weird schedule. Did you get the sense he was apologizing for last week on our behalf? Because
I would just say that. I wouldn't dance around it.
I don't think you would.
I make no apologies for going.
We're putting out quality episodes of the Warp Core every week.
I mean, you're recording them.
We don't put them out. Yeah.
Oh, here's a mini Warp Core. I tried to watch Picard season 3 with Amanda, and we got to the end of the first episode, and she's like, "This, I don't want it anymore." She checked out. Yeah. Well, we'd watched the first.
I'm gonna get Hank into it, I'm sure. But but I'm not gonna try Karen.
Cat devoured it. We loved it.
Okay.
He was a big TNG fan, so.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, same with Amanda, but we watched the first 2 seasons of Picard over the same weekend kind of thing. I forget why. Probably, who cares why. But, and they stank. And then I think it was just inertia that made her do it, and now when she gets back to it, she's like, I don't know, it's like locking a kid in a, nobody does this anymore, but locking a kid in a cupboard with a box of cigarettes and like just not letting them out till they smoke. I think she's had her fill of Picard. She watched that first episode. She's like, I like 3 people in them. They're the people that I like from TNG, and that's it. So, bit of a tough sell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, more to come. Anyways, yeah, thank you everybody out there for listening. We will see you next time.
Included you, Dan. Now you don't have to feel so sad. Yeah,
I liked season three a lot. It really worked.
Yeah, it was fun.
Me too. I'm currently rewatching it.